Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
We open AA meetings with a serenity prayer, and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Hi, everybody. This is the AA on Air meeting on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. As I said before, I'm Rebecca. I'm chairing the meeting today. And we've got with us some people from the Wellington, the Kilburnie, Monday night Kilburnie AA meeting in Wellington. So it's really great to have them here with us. We're going to open with the Serenity Prayer. We've just done the Serenity Prayer. So I'm going to skip to the preamble. And Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now I'm going to ask Jessica to start us off with a reading.
G'day, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. This is from Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think that he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterised by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralisation. We are convinced, to a man, that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We've tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree that there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may yet one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe that they are in this class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try and prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard and long enough to drink like other people.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks, Jessica. You're listening to AA on Air on Wellington Access Radio. This is organised by people from the AA in Wellington. You can, if you're listening to this and you think you might have a problem with drinking, you can get in touch with AA via our 0800 number. It's open 24 hours a day, 0800 229 6757. I'm going to pass to Tim to start the sharing.
My name's Tim, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tim.
Good to be here. So I've done this a number of times. It's funny, I don't think I could ever tell the same story twice. We were just talking earlier about how, you know, you can't change the past. But there's this guy, Chuck Chamberlain, I listen to a lot, and he sort of says, yeah, he can. He does it every day. Like, how I see things is really different, and especially the longer I stay sober, how I see my childhood, my drinking, my drug use, and my recovery changes dramatically as I go along. But I think what's important is that I have alcoholism, and that if you want to come to AA, it's a good idea to have alcoholism. And I know that from... It wasn't just later, by the time I'm 16, people are complaining about my drinking, big seriously, but it's what happened early on. Like, when I have a drink, due to the nature of alcoholism, it sets off this physical allergy. And I know that because really young, two or three times, people gave me two drinks. And I know what it was like to have two drinks and want more and have no way to get more, and that's it, that longing, you know, that my body and soul want another drink, but I'm 10 years old and I can't, and there's just no way. But I remember, so that's the physical allergy. Then when the first time I actually managed to get drunk properly, it was, I remember it so clearly, I must have been about 12, we'd been baling hay, it was a big bottle of Leopard Lager, and they passed it to me, and I was like a man, you know, and I don't know, sculled this bottle, I was thirsty, and that's where I really felt this, that want that warmth come up, and then it was like I relaxed for the first time. I was like that, and I could have more, so I didn't want more because I could just have more. So that it's kicking off, but I'm just keeping going, and it was wonderful. And I remember the next day, like I was violently ill, and I knew, like, really ill, and people, oh, he's, you know, got drunk. It's all standard New Zealand stuff, you know, you get drunk and sick. And I knew to lie, and I looked up at, I think it was my sister-in-law, and saying, oh, I'm never doing that again, thinking I'm doing that the earliest available opportunity. But what was also going on with me at that age is there's alcoholism is prevalent. Every male member of my family has alcoholism. And I didn't want to be like my father or other members of my family, and that they're messy drunks. But the truth was the alcohol had me from the beginning, you know, like, it, you know, by the time I'm 14, that mental obsession, when I'm at school, I am not at school. All I'm thinking is, how can I get money to get booze on Friday? Who can I convince is old enough to, if we put our money together, keg, maybe we can start drinking. All I'm thinking about is, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. And all the other stuff, you know, girls and surfing, they are second, they are distant second and thirds. And, you know, I wanted to be a drug addict. So I smoked a lot of marijuana, but I didn't like it. It would make me paranoid, self-conscious, but I was sort of determined to become a drug addict, not an alcoholic. That was my thing. But yeah, by the time I'm 16, I'd get drunk, smash bottles over people's heads. I'm just a total nightmare, lost all my friends. I was packed off to Australia when I was 17. And then really quickly, I mean, went round Australia anti-clockwise, got arrested in every state and territory except Tasmania, didn't go there. But then I discovered heroin, and that was, I mean, I couldn't wait. Like most people, they're, oh, no. I'm like, yeah. I just, at the first opportunity, you know, do you want to stick this in your arm? I'm, fuck yeah, 100%. And I didn't even like it that much at first, but it sort of grew on me. The heroin just crept up on me, you know, and boy, I mean, that as a young guy, you know, like I moved around a lot, like I and that's the thing, I don't really know the chronological order of my life. I just don't know. Went around Australia, I went to Europe, went through Europe, lived in London, Italy, Greece, back to London, back to Australia, back to London, back. And I think an important thing is that in my mid-20s, there was a period where my life was actually looking good. Like I had it, I was pretty much set up, but the drinking and drugs were a big problem, and I thought, right, this is it, I'm gonna get clean and sober, and I could stop, and I do these awful detoxes at a detox center in Sydney, and I'd get out and I'd go surf, but I'd always find myself either drinking again or getting heroin again. And that's the baffling part of it, because I could understand a physical opiate addiction. Like when you have a heroin habit, you need heroin or else you get really sick. But I could never understand after I've gone through the withdrawal process of that sickness, I do that again. And it was mainly the drinking. For me, the drinking was always the most problematic thing. Like I'd run back to the drugs after the drinking would nearly kill me. And my experiences sober were just fucking horrendous. Like life would start out, it would be, I'd enjoy, right, this is good. And it would just sort of get grey. Maybe the best way to describe it is like there's a little spring inside me that winds up when I, you know, it's just this. And then all of a sudden, all the good things in my life seem like shit. And then that woman I'm married to just becomes this giant pain in my ass because I can't drink and do drugs because it's all her fucking fault. And yeah, so my experience is there. So by the time I'm 25, I thought, right, well, that's it. I cannot be clean and sober. Like, just it's not feasible. It's intolerable. And my life is going to go that way. I had acceptance around it that I will die. I'll probably be going to prison at some point, and I will die younger than, you know, normal. And that was my life, you know. And I threw myself right into the drug subculture. I'd go long periods of time without drinking because I had either a huge heroin habit or on the methadone. I could always not drink if I had those drugs. But if I didn't, I would drink. I used everything. I've had cocaine habits, methamphetamines. These are huge. They actually weren't. It was always either big opiate habits or drinking. But by the time I was 35, I think I was... What happened when I was 35 was it wasn't working. You know, like I couldn't blot out that my life's fucking shit. And even though I was earning money, I was quite good. I was good at making money at that point. But I knew it was killing me, and I just couldn't. My whole life was tied to living like that, and I just couldn't see a way out. You know, but it was just getting progressively worse. But it kept going. Like I remember, I had a Dutch wife. She left, and it was a series of really, really unhealthy relationships. They were fucking horrendous. You know, like I joke about it now. You know, but I had a girlfriend try and kill me 3 times. You know, she, you know, threw the electric heater in the bath. She stabbed me. She stabbed me and she smashed me over the head with a brass candlestick. You know, I laugh at it. That's insane. And I put it down to she loves me. Like, oh, God, Tim. You know, I just didn't want to be – it's just so, everything was so fucked about my life. And the money's rolling in. I can't function. Like, I can't – each time I'd get sick of one friend, it would be my cousins. Well, here's the next one. And because I had money, it's like the – it was just bad. I couldn't do anything. You know, I couldn't buy a car. I could just make money. But when I was about 38 or 39, all of a sudden I got busted. It was serious. You know, police came screaming down the drive because I was a dope guy. I made my money growing into indoor dope all over the place. And I had this huge sense of relief. Like it was like, thank fuck it's over, because I knew the money was killing me. I couldn't stop. And the sense of relief and that it's over now. But it wasn't, you know, I was booked and charged and I was back up and running in days. And my life was increasingly shitty, you know. I had a good lawyer. I avoided a 4-year prison sentence. I got home detention. And it was messy. My life was messy and shit. I was always in some form of physical withdrawal. There was no a lot of mental anguish, even when I was loaded. You know, I couldn't get that freedom. And I finished home. I was doing home D, and an ex-girlfriend had gone to AA, and she decided I was an alcoholic. And she came home and gave me the big book. And I don't know. I don't know what happened. I didn't want to go back to the life I had when home D finished. And I got this guy, his name was Peter Kay, and it was an AA guy, and I just went to AA every day. This guy came, I did an awful, horrendous detox, and yeah, and you know, life got better, life improved, and I was actually a pretty good, you know, I was an ego-driven fuckwit, but I was an okay AA guy for 5 years, you know, I did my best at it. But then I, you know, the program outlined in the book, you know, the way of life, like I stopped living that, and I paid an awful price, you know, I relapsed. And it took me 5 years to get clean and sober again. And all the things that happened, you know. Like, that's why AA is. So AA for me is two things. It's the fellowship, which is the people, and the program of action, which is the steps and the way of life, which is actually contained in the first 103 pages, the end of working with others. That's all there for me. You know, I've got to do those things one day at a time to have any peace sober, you know, to not have a tortured sobriety, but to do that. And what I do now, you know, like I make the welfare of others my concern. And I do that. You know, last night I was on, this is me, I was born selfish, but my actions now are unselfish. Like I do that. I am that guy people can call, I'm reliable, I'm trustworthy. You know, I did phone service last night, it's a drunk guy call, and he was just lonely. And I know, the thing is, I got to the point where I know what it's like just to be fucking alone in the world. And I'll talk to that drunk guy, he's just drunk and alone. And I won't do that. And earlier in the day, you know, like a guy has to go to, what do you call the emergency place? What is it called?
ED.
ED, emergency department. That's it. Thank you, Chrissy. Thanks for a bit of feedback here. Jesus, it's like I'm dying here. Yeah, and I sat with a guy in ED because I know what it's like. When I first started relapsing, I'd go to the hospital and people because cared about me. Then I'm going to the hospital alone and people are saying they cared about me. Then I'm just going to the hospital and no one gives a shit about me. So if anyone, I won't let someone sit in hospital alone. Like, I know what that's like. And this guy was drunk, but I'll say that, and he was obnoxious. He was just like me, you know, and I know what it's like. When I was relapsing, life became a really cruel, fucking lonely, unkind place, you know. And my early recovery, it took me 2 years to sort of get any emotional stability. That just took time, you know. So, like, I'm the best AA guy I can be on any given day, you know. I always have been. But sometimes it wasn't very good, you know. But, you know, I sit here now, it's like I'm over three years clean and sober. You know, I have a home group. I have service missions, I have a sponsor. You know, I turn to this book for a way of life. Like, that's really important. You know, I know what happens if I stray from this. That is catastrophic. It's not like I'll just go out and have a wee slip and come back. It's like, who knows, you know? And the sad thing is, I know if I relapse, I would try and get sober, but I don't think I'll ever be able to. And just the tragedy of that, all the people who care, stop caring. Yeah, it's the, yeah, alcoholism, you know, it's this disease of mind and body, and yeah, and like, often I listen to these things and you hear someone and they sound really good and you think, oh, it's that fuckwit, you know? Like, I'm just a loose unit alcoholic doing the best he can. I'm an idiot. You know, I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I sponsor guys and the first thing I say is, I don't know what I'm doing. I got this book, a guy showed me. If you see anything in this book that you see that I'm missing, point it out to me. And I do this together, you know, like that's the bit that gives me relief from self is that step 12 stuff, you know. And anyway, there we go. I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Tim. You're listening to AA on Air, Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM. If you are listening to this and you think you have a problem with drinking or you want to help someone who does, the website for Alcoholics Anonymous Aotearoa New Zealand is a great place to start. We've got lots of information about what AA is and how it works. As I said, you can get in touch with us on the free call number 0800 229 6757. Now I'm going to ask Jessica to share.
Thanks, Rebecca. Jessica, alcoholic.
Thanks, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. Monday night Kilburnie is my home group, so that means that I'm there every week. At that meeting, we read through the big book a page at a time, and I do like to share on the reading. Today we did chapter 3, more about alcoholism, and it's actually my favourite chapter in the book, because I know alcoholism is a real deadly disease, and it's really easy to look at Tim and go, yep, that's a fucking alcoholic. But I would be what you consider, or what we sometimes call a high bottom drunk in AA. And what that looked like for me is that when I came into AA, I still had a really good professional job. I owned my own home. And there were a number of people in my life who would look at me and think, yeah, she's doing all right. But my outsides did not match my insides. My first day in AA was the worst day of my life. I've been around long enough now to watch people come and go in AA. A lot of people come in for their first meetings, and I love being at someone's first meeting. But there's few people who's come in who look as
broken as I felt in my first meeting. I walked into AA and I cried for the whole meeting, and I cried through my first 8 meetings or so, and then spontaneously throughout the first couple of months of sobriety, because for me, alcohol was my best friend. I fucking loved drinking. I started drinking when I was 16, and I never stopped. I drank for a bunch of reasons, but, you know, I drank when I was happy. I drank when I was sad. My first response to everything was always, have a drink, that'll help. But one of the things about me and my drinking is that my life was manageable a good amount of the time, as long as I had a drink at the end of the day. I could walk around, I could put up with people, I could get things done, as long as I could go home at the end of the day and have a drink. But without a drink, I didn't know how I could get through the day, because without a drink, I feel walking around with a weight on my shoulders all day, every day, like I can't properly breathe. And then I'd get and I'd have that drink and I'd finally be able to relax. I'd be able to catch my breath. And so on that first day in AA, where I knew I couldn't stop drinking, but I couldn't keep living the life that I was living, I couldn't keep feeling like I was feeling, I needed to do something different, I was devastated, because I knew with 100% certainty that I would never feel okay again. I would never be able to catch my breath again without a drink. But it turns out that's not true. I have a wonderful life now, and I one of the best things that AA has given me is the ability to be able to breathe and relax without a drink in my hand, to not have to walk around with the weight on my of the world on my shoulders and that constant feeling of anxiety. And so one of the reasons I love more about alcoholism is I understand alcoholism is a disease, and it's deadly. But more about alcoholism is the chapter that tells me I have alcoholism, because despite that first day, despite walking in and immediately hearing and knowing that, fuck, I'm an alcoholic, I can't stop drinking, and people talked about the allergy, which they said, you know, if you're an alcoholic like we are, what happens is you have a drink and then you can't stop drinking. And I had spent my drinking career just trying to have that first drink, just trying to have that one drink that would give me the ability to breathe and then stop, because I just wanted that one drink. But what would happen is I would have that drink and then suddenly I would forget that I was only going to have one, and I'd somehow end up accidentally drunk. And it just happened over and over and over again. And I would always be constantly baffled as to how this had happened again. How had I ended up drunk at Tuesday night, 2 a.m, because all I'd intended was to go out and just have one drink after work to just wind down. But what happens is I have a drink and I feel good, and I go, oh, I'll just have one more. And so then I have one more, and then I'm having a good conversation, and I'll be talking to someone, and, oh yeah, of course I'll just have one more. It's always just one more. It's never, this is the last one. And then, you know, it'll be 1 o'clock in the morning, I'll be in the pub and I'll be looking in the mirror and the room will be spinning and I'll be feeling dizzy and I'll be thinking, fuck, I've got work the next morning. I need to go home. I'm going to go home now. And I will walk out and I'll walk past the beer and I'll stop for just one more. And that's alcoholism. I didn't realise that. I'd spent my life trying to figure out which drink was the drink that got me drunk. I came to AA and they told me it was the first one, that when I picked up that first drink, I was fucked. From there on, I had no control over it. And I didn't understand that no one else put, that non-alcoholics didn't have to put in as much effort as I put into trying to not get drunk. I've done everything that the book sets out about the methods we try to control our drinking. And I know with certainty I can't control it. But because I'm an alcoholic, the great obsession is that one day I will overcome this and I'll regain the ability to control my drinking. And so my mind likes to play tricks on me. My mind likes to tell me about why I'm not an alcoholic. It will come up with reasons and it will remind me of that one time, yeah, I had one drink and it was fine. And I go, oh, see, you know, it was that one time in the last 2 years where actually everything went perfect. Therefore, I'm not an alcoholic, because that's the way that my brain works, and it doesn't take long. I still do about 4 meetings a week, and I am year and 9 months sober now, but I still need to do about 4 meetings a week because my brain really quickly forgets that I'm an alcoholic. If I go away from AA for too long, if I don't hang around with other alcoholics, the thinking creeps in where I go, oh, it'd just be really nice to have a cocktail after work, but I can't do that because that the end of my drinking was a place that no one wants to be. While I still had those material things, I woke up every morning wanting to die. I would walk into rooms and I'd look at the bean pipes on the roof and think whether it had the structural capacity for me to hang myself. That is not a place that anyone wants to be. These days my life is awesome. I love AA, but also I just love life. There's a lot of joy in my life. Some days are hard, some days are bad. You know, there's ups and downs, and the early sobriety was like whiplash. I was so exhausted from feeling everything all of the time. But these days I get a peace and a serenity that I never even had in my drinking. That ability to breathe that alcohol gave me, that was fake, and it only ever lasted 5 minutes before I was saying, oh, okay, I'll just have one more. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks, Jessica. Thanks, Jessica. You're listening to AA On Air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. This is run by the participation of groups in the Wellington region, and tonight we've got Monday Kilburnie meeting represented here. I'm going to ask Chrissy to share now.
Thank you. I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
G'day, Chrissy.
Kilburnie Monday night has been my home group for the last 9 years. I turned 9 years sober on Monday, and to me it's a real gift and it's a miracle. I came into 12-step programs when I was in my 20s. I went to another fellowship first because I didn't really want to be an alcoholic. I thought drugs were more my problem, but I ended up in AA and I knew I was in the right place. I spent my whole life in full flight from reality. I grew up in a very violent, alcoholic family, extended family, everyone alcoholic, gamblers and addicts. I saw a lot of death. In my early years, I got taught how to lie. I was a nervous wreck, and my mum used to give me her medication to calm me down. I got drunk for the first time on a New Year's Eve when I was 14. I went to a friend's party. All the kids were downstairs. And my friend's older brother had put bottles of alcohol in the non-alcohol punch. And all my friends were going, ooh, it's got alcohol in it. Ooh, yuck, yuck, yuck. But I loved it. Gave me the ability to dance around and flirt with pimply guys. And, oh, just I was a different person. And I was quite happy for a little while. I didn't like the taste. I never, ever liked the taste. But I liked the effect. And then I threw up on the white carpet. Someone's parents took me home. It was probably about 10 o'clock at night. Didn't even make it to midnight. And that was the story of my life. Got into trouble. I shared a room with my sister who was 9 years younger than me, and I divided the room up with string. So she had her side and I had my side. I came home so drunk, tripped over the string, the bookcase came down, my mum came running, my sister was crying. Don't know where my brothers were, but yeah, then I threw up some more. Got into trouble. The next morning, my mum was vacuuming around my bed at about 8 in the morning, and I remember the noise was just killed me. And she said, that'll teach you. You'll end up just like your father. No, I won't. I won't end up like my father. But I did, probably worse. In the next year, I decided that I might become a nun. And so I would pray and go to church all the time. I was totally obsessed with it. And I did really well. That was a fifth form year, must have been about 1980. And I got a prize for diligence, which meant that I was the most hardworking person in my class. And I did work hard, and I got a school certificate, which no one thought I'd get. I really studied. I got a job in school holidays where I met older people. I had money. Someone invited me round to their house and they were drinking and drugging, and I was just amazed. I wanted what they had, and so I did what they did. I went to the sixth form. I was going to be a nurse. My mother was a nurse. I wanted to work in the psych ward. Little did I know that I'd end up as a patient in the psych ward. Little did I know that I'd drag my mother out of Lull Bay Beach after she tried to drown herself. Little did I know that my siblings would be taken from my mother and I'd be left in a house alone. She ended up in a psychiatric institution. Cut a long story short, I had pink hair, lots of black eyeliner. I was drinking all the time with older guys, and I got expelled from school after the head nun got me up in front of the school at assembly and asked me who I thought I was and what I thought I was. And I muttered something under my breath, and she slapped me, so I slapped her back, so I got expelled. And then I went and drank. You know, in those days there were no cameras. I got away with a lot of stuff for a long time, until I didn't, until I was just dribbling, throwing up, mess. In my 20s, I ended up having all the things I wanted, business, car, house, you name it, I had it. But because I suffer from the disease of alcoholism and it's progressive, I lost it all. Visits to A&E, broken arms, broken ankles, broken relationships. I did crazy things. I started getting caught drinking and driving. I hated myself. I changed my hair colour, changed the clothes I wore, changed the people I hung around with so I could keep on drinking. And in the end, it just drove me insane. So fast forward, I'm 59 years old and I've got 9 years of continuous sobriety. And how did I get to that? I woke up one day and I wasn't dead. And all I wanted to be was dead. And I decided that people in AA actually knew what I was going through. I knew deep down inside that I had to have this spiritual experience to be able to stop drinking. I did take naltrexone and antabuse because I had no mental defense against picking up that first drink. I was totally insane. Slowly but surely, I went to a meeting every day. I ended up on community detention. I had to be home at a certain time. I can hardly even remember what it was like. but I had a reward every day, a packet of white chocolate Tim Tams. Every single day, the guy in the dairy where I lived down the road, he bought a whole box for me every day. Sometimes I'd have two packets. And my doctor would say, oh, that's good, you're starting to put on a bit of weight. And then she said, I think you're putting on too much weight, you know. This is recovery. I'd lie around in bed eating the biscuits, and then I'd race to a meeting, then I'd race home again. But what I heard was that I can have a worthwhile life without drinking. I've learnt about boundaries. I've learnt about how I'm powerless over people, places and things. I've learnt about when the person's ready, they're ready. Not when the courts or when their partner or when their parents or their boss tell them they need to get sober. Because I knew I needed to get sober if I wanted any kind of quality of life. And probably on paper my life doesn't look that great, but so much better than it was. I don't have 99% of the problems I used to have. Got quite lazy. I don't really care what other people think. But I do know that if you're an alcoholic of my type, you can get sober and stay sober. And it's totally worth it. Totally worth it. I've had some health problems. And I think, why me? Why haven't I won Lotto? Well, why not me? You know, I abused my body and my mind and people. I lied and cheated and stole. So why would suddenly people like me now? You know, why would they? Why wouldn't I have health problems? Why wouldn't I have the emotional maturity of a 20-year-old? You know, because I have. I don't identify with people the same age as me who aren't alcoholic. I identify with other alcoholics who are like me. And we can have fun. You know, we can have fun. We're not a glum lot. It's not God, God, God. It's a God of my understanding that is with me all the time if I reach out, if I do what's suggested. Yeah, it's been great coming today. And if you do have a problem, you can come to Kilburnie Monday night meeting, 7:30, or you can look up the AA website, or you can just pray that you can get to your first meeting, because it's not the first meeting that's hard, it's the second and the third, it's the 100th. You know, you're not going to like everyone, but you can have enough compassion and empathy to hope that these people who come to meetings do get sober. Yeah. So I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks, Chrissy. And like Chrissy was saying, I should say you're listening to AA on Air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And like Chrissy was saying, there are heaps of ways to get in touch with AA in New Zealand. There's on our website, which is aa.org.nz, there's a meeting list, which is you know, usually the most up-to-date way to find out where the meetings are in your area and what time they're on. My name's Rebecca. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rebecca.
I don't often get a chance to share when I'm doing the radio show, so this is really nice. And, you know, it's been great to hear from everyone this morning. Wellington's a small town, and AA is we've got over 50 meetings a week in Wellington. But after a while, you sort of get to know people, and it's nice on a Saturday morning to sort of see people who maybe go to meetings that are a bit of a different circuit from mine, and to, you know. We were talking before we started about how Chrissy and I have Our birthdays are about 3 weeks apart, and her story was one of the first that I heard when I was at AA, and you know, one of my first AA meetings, and desperate, you know, that's what I love about this fellowship and the way that AA works is hearing your story through other people's words, and you know, a friend of mine likes to call it the God with skin on moments, that you know, this is what makes you relate, you know, and my story is so much like you know, any other alcoholic origin story. You know, I started drinking quite young, well, you know, my earlier teens, and I loved it for the way that it released me from all that uncertainty and insecurity and anxiety. And, you know, suddenly I could find a way of stepping outside of my awkwardness, and I felt at ease. You know, I remembered when, you know, when I was a kid going to church on a Sunday, and you'd go and take, you know, grew up in a Catholic family, and, you know, you'd go and take communion and drink the wine, and I could feel it like running through my veins. It was the most, you know, I could feel it right down to my fingertips. And, you know, I never told anybody how that made me feel, because I thought they'd probably suggest that I should become a nun or something like that. No, that was not on my kind of list of interests, you know, once I got into recovery and I started really thinking about that, I realized that was my body reacting differently to alcohol from other people. You know, we are physically different. There's that, you know, that was how I sort of came to understand the talk about the manifestation of the physical allergy. A lot of people don't experience that and the sort of magic of it. Yeah, it was kind of amazing. So right from the beginning, I think I reacted differently to alcohol from other people, and I loved it. It became my everything. I took every opportunity to drink that was available, and you know, it's funny. I thought that was where all the answers lay. You know, of course, once I got sober, I realized that actually that comfort I'd been seeking all the time was not in the bottle at all. It was it was in sobriety, and you know, the contentment that you can find, and the freedom from self-loathing that comes through sort of diligently working through the program and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my sobriety working this program has truly, it's given me a life I could not have, you know, imagined. And I'm incredibly grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, everyone who's gone before us, and you know, the people in Wellington AA who helped me and, you know, lifted me up as I sort of found my way forward. And I'm just going to close us off now with the, we do the Serenity Prayer together. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
While sitting.
Thanks, Rebecca.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.